That night, as she lay in the top bunk and tried to arrange her thoughts for sleep, Kate heard the faint but unmistakable sounds of grief coming from the bunk below her. "Gods above, Utina Tenjo," she thought to herself. "What happened to you?" The next morning, her first morning in this unfamiliar place, Utina awoke disoriented. As she worked her way up through the layers of sleep toward full wakefulness, she knew immediately that she wasn't in her own bed, but couldn't quite remember where she was instead. A momentary feeling of panic surged up, but couldn't pierce the veil of recently abandoned unconsciousness, and she relaxed into a sort of fatalistic lassitude as she waited for her faculties to return. A moment later, with a mental feeling rather like the sound a carbonated beverage makes when the last of the foam has gone, they did, and she lay fully awake. She didn't open her eyes yet, instead simply listening. She could hear faint day sounds, people talking and calling to each other a long way off. Closer, there was a quiet mechanical whir. Buried in that, what sounded like a curious, irregularly repeated sizzling sound. Her nose caught the faintest whiff of what smelled like hot metal. She sat up and opened her eyes to see nothing much. Herself, still bundled in bedclothes from the waist down, a dark shape at the end of the bed, the wardrobe that had been shoved against the footboard to make more space in the middle of the room, to her left, the blank white expanse of the wall. To her right, a gently rippling white barrier. Fumbling with this, she stuck her head out into the room. Sunlight, until now muted by the bedsheet hanging down the side of the bunk beds like a four-poster's canopy, assaulted her. The blinds were fully drawn, the window open, and the light of the sun poured into the room, making the white walls glow. Directly opposite Utina's viewpoint, Caitlin Hutchins was sitting at the desk nearest the window, her back to the beds, head bowed over something that sizzled and smoked. By the head of the bed, an atmosphere cleaner hummed gently. After a few moments, Kate seemed to feel that she was being observed. She paused in whatever she was doing and turned. With a smile, she flipped up the clear plastic face shield she was wearing and said, "Morning." She pointed with a soldering iron at a paper plate standing atop the small brown refrigerator at the end of the desk. "Muffin." Utina got out of bed, yawned, stretched, and put on her dressing gown. "I missed breakfast, huh?" Kate nodded. "What are you doing?" Utina asked as she picked up the muffin. While waiting for her answer, she got a pint of milk from the refrigerator, sat down in the other desk chair, and started on her belated breakfast. "Building an acoustic damper web," said Kate as she knotted her shield down and returned to work on the innards of the little silver metallic box she had sitting before her. "Why?" asked Utina. "Neighbors might not appreciate the piano," Kate replied matter-of-factly. Utina pondered this, then took another bite of her muffin, washed it down with a gulp of milk, and said, "What piano?" Kate nodded her head in the general direction of the mystery desk, which stood near the door, blocking one of the wardrobes. It had been turned on its side, apparently preparatory to being removed from the room to make space for something else. "You're going to... wait. The package Moose was talking about? It's a piano?" Kate nodded. "But why? You've already got all this stuff," Utina said, indicating the rack next to Kate's desk with the two electronic keyboards, the stack of processing and amplification below it, and the guitar on a stand next to that. "Not the same." She finished a final trace, snapped the backplate onto the box, and regarded it with satisfaction. "There," she said, slotting the soldering iron into its place in the rack of tools suspended inside the top side drawer of her desk, then hanging the face mask on a hook attached to the desk's side. She carried the box and the straight-back chair over to the door, stood on the chair, and affixed the box to the wall above the door. Utina noticed five more of the boxes, one on each of the room's other walls, one on the ceiling, and one on the floor by the foot of the beds. They all had small amber lights on them. As Kate pressed a button on the face of the one she'd just installed, an amber light began blinking on that unit as well. As it did, all the others blinked with it, and then they all turned steady green. Kate grinned, then turned to Utina. Do me a favor? Utina tossed the plate and the empty milk carton in the wastebasket and said, Sure. What? Kate took her roommate's elbow and steered her out into the hall. As Utina crossed the threshold, she heard a very soft sort of fup sound. She turned around to see Kate holding up a hand in a wait there gesture. The brown-haired girl trotted back to the stack of musical equipment and switched a few things on, then picked up the guitar from its stand and put its strap over her shoulder. Then she looked up, through the doorway, at Utina, and gave her a thumbs up. Feeling rather foolish, Utina returned the sign, and Kate grinned and started miming as if she were playing the guitar. Utina watched her do this with mounting puzzlement for a second or two, and smiled as she realized what it meant. She stepped back through the doorway. Utina flinched, assaulted by the raucous, distortion-rich sound, and Kate stopped playing. Sorry, she said. She switched everything off and put the guitar back where it belonged, then pressed the switch on the damper unit mounted on the wall next to Utina's desk. The lights on all six units turned amber again. Standby mode, she explained, and no need to waste power. Utina wanted to ask where Kate had learned to make something like that, but the answer might have taken 20 minutes and cost her roommate considerable aggravation and effort, so she skipped it and just said, That's cool, Kate. Kate grinned. Thanks. Her wristwatch beeped at her. Glancing at it, she scowled. Damn. I have to go. Utina was puzzled. Why? Classes don't start until Monday. Kate rolled her eyes. It's a student council meeting. Utina frowned. You're on the student council? Unfortunately, Kate replied as she stuffed a notebook and a couple of pens into a book bag and sat down to put on her shoes. I'm band president. Automatic seat. She wondered why Utina found that so upsetting, for there were lines of alarm etched on the other girl's face that had sprung there the moment Kate had mentioned the council. It's a waste of time, Kate went on, trying to soothe the strange tension that had come into Utina's face. All we ever do is fight. When that seemed only to worry her more, Kate gave up. Back as soon as I find an excuse. She was back after lunch, grumbling semi-intelligibly about the meeting having gone on so long. Sandwiches had been brought in, but the general gist of the complaint, so far as Utina could follow it from Kate's hangfire muttering, was that she would much rather have spent an hour at table 11 in the Morgan dining hall with her friends than an extra hour at the conference table in the student council chamber with the rest of that august body. And if Liza Broad Bank doesn't make up her mind who she's engaged to, somebody's gonna die, Kate grumbled, throwing her council workbook into her desk drawer as though it had personally offended her. Utina decided not to rile her roommate further by asking questions, and instead busied herself rearranging her few belongings. This led her into consideration of the Big W student uniform, which she would have to go down to the campus bookstore and acquire several of by the end of the day, since they had to be worn during class hours, starting with course registration on Monday. She was sitting cross-legged on her bed, leafing through the glossy Student Life section of the year's course catalog, and frowning at a photo of several carefree-looking kids, well, except for the Vulcan, who was looking properly dour, crossing the quad in a happy little group, three girls and two boys. Then she went to the index and looked through that, but got no satisfaction. Finally, she looked up at Kate, or at her back, anyway, since she was sitting at her desk writing something in her notebook. "Hey, Kate," asked Utina. "Hmm? Have you got a copy of the school rules?" Kate rummaged around in her top drawer, came up with a thin black book, and held it back over her shoulder with her free hand. Utina made a noise of thanks, took it, and started paging through it. "Aha," she said after a moment, grinning. Kate turned to give her a puzzled look. "You'd think more schools would mention the fact that there are two different uniforms in their rules," Utina observed, "but they never seem to think of it." Kate swiveled in her chair, a puzzled look on her face. Utina explained, "At my old school, there was this one guidance counselor who used to give me hell all the time for wearing a boy's uniform." She indicated the black jacket she was wearing. "But there was nothing in the school's rules and regulations that said I couldn't. All it said was that students must wear one of the approved uniforms, and this is, well, was one." She held up the little book with a triumphant grin. "This school's rule for uniforms is worded almost exactly the same." Kate cocked an eyebrow at her. So you'll... She trailed off, leaving the rest of the question as obvious. Utina flipped open the catalog to the page with the group on the quad and pointed to the boy on the left. "That doesn't look too bad. It's not as sharp as the old Otori black, but with a little tailoring, it'll do." Caitlin looked. She actually knew the boy in question and agreed with a private little smile that he didn't look too bad, although that wasn't what Utina had meant. As for the uniform itself, it was the summer weight version of Worcester Prep's male uniform, a charcoal gray blazer over black dress shirt and scarlet tie, with dressy shorts that matched the blazer and low black boots with tab closures. Kate spent a moment envisioning her roommate so attired, made allowances for tailoring, and nodded. "Dangerous," she agreed, then plunged onward to make a little joke. "Campus accident stats will rise." Utina smirked a little. "You think?" Kate nodded. Something about the tie. Utina considered the picture, nodded speculatively, and put the catalog aside. "I guess I better go get set up," she mused, uncoiling her legs and hopping up from the bed. "Hopefully they won't put up too much of a fight. Can I take this with me?" she added, holding up the rule book. Kate made a dismissive gesture, smiled, and went back to what she'd been doing, and, armed for battle, Utina left the room. She was back 2 hours later, dressed in the first of her new uniforms to come off the auto tailor, with four more, one winter weight, her old clothes and an overcoat slung over one shoulder, and as she applied her key and shoved the door open, she swept in through the doorway and struck a pose with a cheery, "Ta-da!" Applause erupted as the entire Institute Band Geeks Federation shot to its feet as a single unit. Azalin gave a piercing wolf whistle that was probably heard across the quad. Blushing scarlet to match her new necktie, Utina towed the door shut and went to one of the wardrobes to hang up her new uniforms. Devlin Carter fell to the floor, clutching at his head and whimpering, "My eyes! I'm blinded! Someone help!" Amanda Dessler's notion of helping seemed to involve a swift kick, but he rolled deftly out of her line of fire and sprang back to his feet with a grin. Finishing her work, Utina turned back to face them, her countenance still a bit pinker than normal, looking embarrassed at Kate. That person gave her a little shrug. Your own damn fault, she pointed out. "I didn't know you'd have company," said Utina. "Wow," said Azalin, bouncing over and running a lap around Utina to take her in from every angle. "How'd you get the autotailer to do that? That's so cool. Just look what the slope of the jacket does for your bust line. Phil, you're gorgeous. I wish I had a body like that." Utina reddened again and murmured something by way of thanks. Moose McEachern, tapping thoughtfully at his chin, rumbled, "Gushing about your fitness aside, how did you get the auto tailor to do that? I never had it offer me a blouse and skirt."
"Let's all take a moment and thank God for that," said Devlin.
Utna giggled and replied,
"Systems like that can be overridden. You just have to know where to apply the pressure."
"And in this case," said Amanda, "that would be..."
"The guy that runs the machine," Utna replied.
"Ah," said Moose with an understanding nod. "Social engineering. Well done. You'll fit right in around here."
Utna thanked him, then noticed what the five had been sitting around when she came in. On the floor was a big sheet of paper with a crudely drawn map of something sketched on it in black magic marker. Various colored markers lay scattered around, and cryptic notations adorned the map here and there.
"What's this?" she asked. "Operation Install the Package has hit a bit of a logistical snag," said Moose gravely. "My van's broken down. Bad alternator."
"That's a problem," Utna concurred. "How heavy is the package?"
"About 600 pound with the crate," said Devlin. "And us at the top of a beastly great hill, what?"
Utna gave a wan smile. "And I suppose the package is at the bottom?"
Actually, said Kate, it's at the Port Authority in Boston.
Utna dropped her face into her hand.
"Oh."
"The hill's not a problem," Moose mused wryly, flexing one massive arm. "But I'm not carrying a piano all the way from Boston."
"Well, I still say there's nothing for it," Devlin said. "We'll just have to put it on the train."
"I don't think it'd fit through the doors, Devlin," Kate mused.
"We could send a scouting party to take some measurements," said Azalin.
"Of every doorway between the Port Authority and Union Station?" asked Amanda pointedly.
"I'm not carrying a piano all the way from Union Station, either," Moose said. "Sorry, Kate, but that's a couple miles. I'd probably get arrested."
"For what?" Devlin wanted to know.
"How should I know? Curfew violation? Carrying a suspiciously large box? Being weird in a built-up area? Anyway, I'm not a machine, for Buck's sake."
"No, Moose, that's okay," Kate said. "We'll think of something else."
The door clicked, startling everyone, and then popped unceremoniously open, admitting, well, a rather outlandish creature. Wiry and tanned, with a wild shock of blaze-red hair, dressed in a white tank top, black bike shorts, and a wearable computer that looked a bit like it had been assembled in the dark from dissimilar parts bins, eyes invisible behind a pair of green data goggles, this curious individual waved a cheery hand and declared in a high voice,
"Hi, everybody! Edward is sorry Edward is late. Ayn was playing intergalactic diplomacy, and Edward couldn't get him to log off until he'd finished conquering the Voldrani."
A Welsh corgi, also equipped with data goggles, with a wearable slung over his back, trotted into the room between the newcomer's feet, barked, and plunked himself down next to Azalin.
"Silly dog," Edward continued with a fond smile.
"I conquered the Voldrani last week," Amanda said smugly.
"Not much of an achievement if a corgi can manage it in an afternoon, what?"
Devlin pointed out.
"Be silent, Earthman," Amanda growled.
"Anyway, Einie is no ordinary corgi," said Azalin, hugging the dog gleefully. "Are you, Einie?"
Ayn barked.
"So what's the plan?"
said Edward, who marched into the room and looked down at the wrong end of the diagram.
"Super emergency meeting. Serious stuff. Edward is curious."
"Katie's piano is trapped in Boston, and Moose's altar thingy broke," said Azalin.
Edward dropped into a catcher's crouch, surveyed the map, then turned goggled eyes toward Utna.
"Edward doesn't know you. Who are you?" asked Edward bluntly.
Utna Tenjo," Utna replied. "I'm Caitlin's roommate."
"Oh! Edward didn't know Caitlin had a roommate again. The last one didn't work out so well. Brr! Anyway, nice to meet you.
Edward pushed up the green goggles, revealing eyes startlingly similar in color to Azalin's, though a bit lighter and not as oddly reflective.
Edward is Edward. Edward Wonghao Pipilu Tavruski IV, and that's Edward's partner, Ein the Wonder Corgi.
Ein barked. Are you a student? Utina wondered.
Edward replied grandly, is a student of life.
And a moocher of unused meal plan credits, said Amanda disapprovingly. And a sleeper in the wedge, Moose observed.
And the best hacker in the quadrant, Devlin pointed out. And a nice girl who has a great doggy,
Azalin chipped in, still cuddling the corgi. Utina, who had been suspecting Edward of being a boy, blinked, adapted, and, moving her train of thought along, smiled. But not a student here.
Well, not enrolled, Edward allowed, but I could if Edward wanted to be. The admissions department computer is a total joke. Ein could crack it having the chasing a rabbit dream.
Cause Ein is the smartest doggy in the universe, Azalin added. Can he help us figure out how to get a piano from the Boston Port Authority to this room without getting arrested? Asked Utina wryly. Kate cocked an eyebrow at her, intrigued by her automatic and natural use of us, and smiled.
You might be surprised, she said. Oh, that's what this is for, Edward said, plunking down to have a better look. Let me think.
Ein wriggled free from Azalin, had a look at the map, then ran across the room and tried to look out the window, but was thwarted by being much too short.
What is it, Ein? Asked Edward as she got up to take a look. What's outside?
Leaning, she looked out the window. When she turned back, it was with a sly smile.
Ein has an idea, she said.
Utina didn't bother asking Caitlin if she were sure this was a good idea, since she was pretty certain the answer would be too complex for her roommate to render without paper and pen. The light was too bad for that here, down on the little courtyard to the side of the quad. The only lighting came from the two weak flood lamps on the end of Morgan Hall, and the glow filtering over from the parking lot lamps farther across the quad. The night was foggy and a bit chilly, and the five who had been selected by committee vote to form the actual piano retrieval party, there being too many people involved in the operation to all take part in the actual field phase, slunk along the side of the dorm, dressed darkly. Utina felt a bit foolish, back in her old uniform jacket with the shiny bits covered by black tape, wearing the dark gray pants from her one winterweight uniform, her hair hidden under a black knit watch cap. For this phase of the operation, stealth had been deemed preferable to power, so Moose and Amanda had stayed behind. Devlin, deeming himself so cowardly I'd jeopardize a lot of you, had voted to remain as well. That left Caitlin, who had the paperwork for the piano itself, Azalin, who could talk fast and long if the need arose to get them out of a jam, Edward, who had come up with the plan in the first place, Ein, who always accompanied Edward and who was in some way essential to the plan anyway, and Utina, who wasn't sure why she was along, but Kate seemed to want her to come. They rounded the corner of the dorm, and there, parked in the lone parking space under the tree at the short end of the building, was the Student Council Activities van, a late-model dark red Dodge with WPI's twin towers and the school's initials painted on the sides.
"Okay, Ein," Edward whispered. "Open it up."
The dog whined softly, cocked his head, and approached the van. Utina raised an eyebrow to Kate, who only smiled. There were a couple of muted chirps from the van's electronics, and then the doors unlocked with a clunk.
"Good dog," said Edward. "Let's go."
As they approached the van, Caitlin slapped her forehead in exasperation.
"Oh, damn," she hissed. "What?"
Azalin whispered.
"Without Moose or Amanda, who's going to drive?"
Azalin blinked. That hadn't occurred to her either. Then looked speculatively at Utina.
"Utina, you look the oldest," she pointed out. "Think you can handle it?"
"Drive?" Utina said, looking a little alarmed. She went to the side of the van and looked in through the window. Well, the controls looked simple enough, and she'd seen it done. If she didn't, they'd have to go get Amanda. Moose would never fit behind that steering wheel. And they already had the van unlocked.
Sure, said Utina, climbing carefully into the driver's seat.
Edward got into the front passenger side with Ayn at her feet. Utina had a little time to look over the controls and get ready for this grand experiment, since Caitlin and Azalin spent the next couple of minutes carefully and quietly removing the two rearmost of the van's four bench seats, folding them up, and stacking them neatly on the grass under the tree. She was relieved to see her initial snap judgment backed up by closer examination. It really didn't look that hard. While she was fiddling with the directional signal lever and such, Edward was investigating the ignition lock.
Keypad manufacturer's override on an O2 Dodge?
Ayn? Edward can't remember the second number. Ayn nosed the onboard computer's keypad for a moment, then pressed a switch with his nose, and the van's turbine engine whirred softly to life, the gauges springing online. Utina grinned, made sure all were aboard, pulled the lever down into D, and stepped on the accelerator. The van lurched violently, careening toward the sharp left turn that would take it around the end of Morgan Hall toward Institute Road, accelerating much faster than she'd expected. Biting off a curse, she straightened the wheel and applied the brakes, again too hard. The van skidded to a halt, depositing its rear seat passengers into the gap.
Said Edward.
A little lighter on the gas, I think, Caitlin murmured as she picked herself up off the floor, made sure she was belted in this time.
And the brakes, Azalin added, doing likewise.
Too much noise, Edward mused dubiously.
Sorry, said Utina. It was more sensitive than I expected.
With her passengers looking paranoically out the windows, trying to see if anyone had heard that noise and come running to investigate, Utina tried it again, and this time the van accelerated smoothly. She took it easy around the corner and down the short driveway that led to Institute, braking to a halt there without further incident.
"Which way?" she asked.
"Loading navigation program now," Edward replied briskly, her fingers working in the intricate patterns that activated the fingertip keypads she wore. The VDU in the middle of the dash flickered, then changed to a map, with a glowing red triangle indicating their position. On the head-up display projected inside the windshield appeared the glowing red words, "Left on Institute Road." Thus directed, Utina found her way to Route 9. This route had been selected rather than the Massachusetts Turnpike because, though slower, it would not require them to pass through toll booths and thus subject themselves directly to the scrutiny of law enforcement. As they went along, stopping for the numerous traffic lights, passing through Shrewsbury and Westboro and Framingham, the new driver got more comfortable with the van's operation. It handled fairly easily for such a boxy, ungainly vehicle. Moose sat on the floor, in front of Caitlin at Utina's chest of drawers, watching Devlin and Amanda play Street Fighter Super Gamma Plus 4 Ultimate Turbo Galactic Championship Edition Mark III on Kate's old Segatari Wonderbox, when suddenly his brow furrowed thoughtfully. He rose to his feet and turned to look out the window of 412, down at the empty space where the student activities van should have been.
"Oh, no," he rumbled.
"What?" asked Devlin, pausing the game.
"Amanda," said Moose.
"Yes," said Amanda.
Without turning around, Moose observed,
"You and I are the only ones with driver's licenses."
Amanda looked a bit shocked.
"Great crew, you're right. Are they still here?"
"Nope."
"Then who's driving?"
"Well, Kate can, but she'd seem too nervous if they got pulled over. Azalin can't. Ed shouldn't. The van doesn't have rigger gear, so Ayn can't."
"Coo! Do you think they got the new girl to do it?"
Devlin blurted. Moose stood with his hands folded behind his back for a moment, looking out the window at the lights of the quad.
"Yep."
An hour after leaving WPI, Utena applied herself to the more complex and demanding task of navigating to the Port Authority complex near the Boston waterfront, through the ancient tangle of tiny streets that made up the core of the city. This entire area seemed to be under construction, causing the already perverse layout to become downright baffling in places. And as she picked her way through the third or fourth unfathomable detour, Utena noticed flashing colored lights in the rearview mirror.
"Oh, damn," said Kate. "Busted."
"No bulletins out on the van," Edward insisted. "Must have done something wrong." "Well, I'm sure as hell not speeding," Utena grumbled as she pulled the van over, rolled down her window, and waited. "Now what do we do? I don't have any ID or anything."
"Take that tape off your jacket," said Azalin in an urgent hiss as she whipped Utena's watch cap off from behind. "It'll look suspicious."
Utena did as instructed, wadding it up into a little ball and hurriedly dropping it to the floor of the van. The police officer, a burly fellow who looked to be in his early 40s, ambled up from his parked cruiser and shined his flashlight inside. "Evening, kids," he said. "A little late for you to be out, isn't it? You lost? I noticed you've been wandering around a lot."
Utena gave him a smile, fiercely squashing her nervousness, and said, "Yeah, actually I am. I'm trying to find the Port Authority, but all this construction. I'm not used to driving down here at night."
"What brings you down at this hour?"
"There's an important package from off-world at the Authority," she replied, not missing a beat. "Things for the Student Council. Perishable, and they're already late. We figured it was best to come right down."
"I see. Can I see your driver's license, please, miss?" Utena nodded, reached into her jacket, then adopted a puzzled expression and started patting down all her pockets. She said with an embarrassed grin. "Looks like I forgot my wallet." The policeman frowned. "What's your name?"
"Broadbank," Utena replied unhesitatingly. "Liza Broadbank."
Behind her, she heard Azalin smother something else with a sneeze and pray the others wouldn't screw it up. She was nervous enough as it was.
"And you're on the WPI Student Council?"
"Uh-huh."
The policeman, Sergeant Vanderkelt, according to his name tag, shined his light around inside the van a bit more, going from one to the other.
"And the others?"
"Only me," Kate said. "Edward and Azalin are helping. It's kind of a surprise, she added in an apologetically explanatory tone.
Vanderkelt nodded, scratching thoughtfully at his chin.
"Okay, wait here a second."
He went back to his cruiser, and Utena let out a breath.
"So far, so good," she murmured. "That was quick thinking, saying you were Liza Broadbitch," Azalin said softly.
"Uh-oh," said Edward. "Utena!"
"What?" Utena said, turning to face Ed, then recoiling with a startled expression as the flash of a digital camera went off in her face.
"What the hell was that for?"
"He's running the plates again, making sure the van's not stolen," said Edward from her data trance, jacking the digicam into her harness.
1 out of 12, 1 out of 12, Linka X-ray, Ida, 432... No want, no warrant. Aha! Now he's running Liza Broadbank's name."
She tapped the camera. "Her photo looks like you. Her record's clean." She grinned.
"For now."
A beat. "Ein just had her sign the van out for the night. Don't forget to change the timestamp to this afternoon."
The dog yipped in a faintly indignant tone, as if offended that he could be thought so stupid as to miss a thing like that.
"Think he'll call a school?"
"Why should he?" Kate said. "We're not actually doing anything wrong."
"Yeah, we just looked suspicious because we're lost," said Azalin hopefully.
The sergeant got out of his car, chuckling a little at the file photo of the Broadbank girl he'd pulled from the RMV central computer. She looked like someone had just called her name and then snapped the picture when she turned to ask what. Walked up and shined his light around a little more inside. Utena held her breath and tried not to look anywhere near as nervous as she felt.
This construction's a pain, said Sergeant Vanderkelt sympathetically. If you take a left down at the end of this street, then your first right, and then bear right at the lights, you'll get to the Port Authority. Getting out is easier. He smiled, flicked off his light, and touched the brim of his cap. Have a good night, Miss Broadbank, and drive safely. Then he turned, went back to his car, and cruised away into the night. Utina exhaled until she thought that she might pass out. Azalin jumped up, leaned over the back of the seat, and hugged her from behind. Caitlin applauded quietly, smiling. Edward looked smugged.
Way to go, Utina, Azalin said, giving her a kiss on the cheek before subsiding into her own seat. You foxed a city cop without even breaking a sweat. You're so cool.
Utina grinned a little sheepishly. Thanks, she said, and started the van going again. But hold the victory celebration until we get home, huh?